And we're holding on page 48 in Shabbos, Ois Lamed Daled. We learned yesterday about that Reuven, Koloimu Reuven, Chota in Elatoya, that it wasn't that he blatantly did the Aveda that's written about him in the Pasuk, but rather something more dacristic. We said there were actually different Tanoim about that, whether he actually did it and then did Tshuva or didn't do it in the first place. So now the next one in the list. Amar Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amar Rav Yonasan, Koloimu Bnei Eli Chota in Elatoya. Anybody who says that the sons of Eli sinned, again, in the blatant way that it describes about them in the Pasuk, is making a mistake. Now, you actually have the Pesukim there describe two different things that they did wrong. One is it says that they were treating the Kodshim with contempt. Within that, there were two different things. One is that they were grabbing pieces of it even before the Chalev was offered on the Mizbeach. And the other is that they were forcing people to give them more than what they deserve. And the other thing, but a few psukim later, it mentions that they were lying with the women who came and then gathered by the oil moed. So that's the one the Gemara is going to talk about. That's blatant znus with Eishes Ish. So that's what the Gemara is going to say, that they're not actually guilty of that. Shenema, because the Pasuk says, Visham Shnei Bnei Eli, at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, it says that when Elkanah would visit the Mishkan in Shiloh, there were the two sons of Eli, Chofni and Pinchas, Koyanim Hashem, Chofni and Pinchas, those were their names, and they were the Koyanim, and they were the Koyanim of Hashem. So the point is, in other words, Maharsha says, what's the point of that Pasuk? How is that Pasuk relevant over there when you're telling us that Elkanah would visit the Mishkan in Shiloh every now and then? What's the point of mentioning that Chofni and Pinchas were there? So therefore, what it means is that the Gemara is going to say, the Pasuk wants to compare the two of them together. And since we're going to establish that one of them is not guilty of that Aveda of Znus, then the Pasuk is implying by putting them together that neither is the other. But again, Tosfos explains that we're not talking about the Aveda of treating the Kodshim with contempt. That the Pasuk says flat out that they were doing, and that we're not doubting anything different, at least according to most Mandamas. We'll talk about actually one of the Mephoshim over here, the Rif, wants to say that maybe not that one either, but at least on the surface, we're saying only the one about Eishes Ish. Are we saying they're not guilty of? So how does the fact that it's comparing Chofni and Pinchas, how does that tell us anything about them not doing this Aveira? Sabla Karav, Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni holds like Rav, de Omer Rav, Pinchas loy chata. Rav says you should know that Pinchas did not do this Aveira. As he's going to show soon in a few lines, we'll learn how Rav learns from other Pesukim that Pinchas never committed such an Aveira of being Mizana with an Eishes Ish. And therefore, since the Pasuk is comparing them, Makish Chofni le Pinchas, Ma Pinchas le Chota af Chofni le Chota. So by comparing them, it shows that neither of them was guilty of this Aveira. So Ela Mani Makayim Asher Yishkuvon Es Hanashim. So what does the Pasuk mean that it says that Eli heard that they're sleeping together with the women? It means Mitoch Sheshihu Es Kinehen, because they delayed the bringing the bird korbanos for these women. Now, the previous psukim describe, again, in connection with this matter of bizoyin kodshim, it mentions that they were grabbing the meat even before the chaylev is brought on the mizbeach, and they're forcing people to give them more. So therefore, they wanted as much as possible meat from the korbanos. And you can imagine, you know, they probably found ways to rationalize it for themselves. After all, hakoyim oichlim b'vayim meskaprim. So therefore, whatever the case, the point is, therefore, kodshim that involve very little meat, they weren't interested in as much. Now, a chata sa'oif, fine, the kohenim eat it, but there's not very much meat on it. It's a small creature, after all. So therefore, they would delay, Rashi says, b'chlal, bring any korban, they would bring only with koshi, only with difficulty. So now, when women have to bring, a woman after she gave birth, or a zava, or whatever, has to bring a korban, and the Torah tells us that they bring two birds. So these women, so Chofni and Pinchas would delay bringing those korbanos, because like they would say those are less important. So now, usually the halacha is that a person, you have the Mishnah mentions in Shkalim and in other places, and it's mentioned in other places in Shas, that you're able to, when you have to bring a pair of birds as a korban, a chatas and an oila, you can put money for the purpose in one of the boxes in the Beis Hamikdash that was labeled accordingly. And then you don't have to stick around. You could leave and depend on the fact that the Beis Din Shel Koyanim will be responsible and will make sure that day those korbanos are brought. So therefore, later on, you'll be able to eat kodshim without having to go back and check with them. Now, in this case, with Chofni and Pinchas being careless about that, you couldn't rely on that. Therefore, these women would actually have to stay there until they can verify that their korban's actually been brought. So they're not able to go back to, they're not able to go back home to their husbands and be able to have relations with them. Therefore, the posit counts it as if Hophni and Pinchas had relations with them in the sense that they prevented them from period viriv. And that's why the posit writes it that way, even though they didn't actually do that. There's different other explanations that Mefarshim explain how exactly delaying the kinim results in something that can be called yishkavonas hanoshim. Another explanation is that you'd have not just these women, you'd have other people as well who are bringing korbanos, and they couldn't depend on Hophni and Pinchas to bring them in time. So therefore, they'd have to camp out outside the Mishkan in Shiloh over there, and not always was it possible to make sure that the men and women are camping in different places such that there shouldn't be the possibility of them mingling and coming to Aveda. And therefore, the Pasuk is blaming it on Hophni and Pinchas. Yad Yosef, by the way, brings an idea. Since the Pasuk says Yishkevun with a nun, with a langen nun at the end, we're the same thing. It could also, Yishkevu would mean the same thing. It would also mean they lay with. But a lot of times we find at the end of a word, a langen nun sometimes makes it like smaller than it otherwise would be. For example, you have the word Ishoin, the pupil of the eye. Ish means a person. Ish shine means the pupil of the eye, because like you see a tiny little reflection of a person in it. So the same way, by putting over here, Yishkevun is one way that the Pasuk is hinting at that it was much smaller than you think it is. So B'tok Shishiwas Kenen, Shalai Hofo Eitzabalein. So now the women are not able to go home to their husbands. Malai Alei Makosev Kilo Shochvum. So therefore the Posit counts it against Hophni and Pinchas as though they actually lay with these women, but not that they actually did. So Gufa, so getting back to, we said Amar Rav Pinchas Leichata, that was saying that Pinchas did not do such an actual Avera. So Rav is not saying necessarily that Hophni did not. According to Rav, on the face of it, you could say Pinchas didn't, but Hophni did. But only Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni is saying that since the Pasuk equates them at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, then it means if one didn't, then the other didn't. But first, we have to establish how we know that Pinchas did not do such an aveda. Shenema, because later on in Sefer Shmuel, you have, describes over there in connection with one of the wars against the Plishtim, V'achia ben Achitu v'achi ichobod ben Pinchas ben Eli Kohen Hashem v'gomer, that at that time you had the Kohen Gadol was Achia, the son of Achituv, where Achituv was the brother of Ichobod. So the Pesukim described over there earlier in Sefer Shmuel, how on the day when the Oren was captured, when Pinchas and Hophni were both killed in the battle over there trying to defend the Oren against the Plishtim, Pinchas's wife was pregnant. And the Pesukim describe over there how when she heard the terrible news that her husband had been killed and her father-in-law had passed away and the Oren had been captured, then it caused her to go into early labor and she died in childbirth. She named the baby Ichavod to say the covered of the Jewish people has been taken away. E means like not, like ain. There's no covered because the covered, the Oren, has been taken away. So now this Ichavod eventually grew up. He had a brother named Achituv, and Achituv in turn had a son Achia, and in the times of Shaul, this Achia was the Kohen Gadol. So the point is, this Achia is a grandson of Pinchas, and he's serving as Kohen Gadol. So Ef Shochet Bala Yodai. Now, how would it be possible that and the point is not just that he was Pinchas's grandson, but the Pasuk makes a point of mentioning that. That he was Pinchas' grandson. So Ef Shochet Bala Yodai, would it have been possible that such an Avera of Znus would have been something that he actually did, Va'akosiv Miyachsoi, and the Pasuk would be saying a praise for Pinchas that his grandson eventually is serving as Kohen Gadol, Va'aloikvan Nemar. Isn't there a pasuk that says in the Navi Malachi is criticizing the Jewish people of his times for a number of things they're doing wrong? One of them is there was a big problem of intermarriage in his times. The Gemara mentions in Megillah that Malachi is none other than Ezra, and Ezra, we know from his Sefer, had a tremendous amount to deal with that problem of intermarriage. Anyway, Malachi says, Yachris Hashem l'ish asher yasen, Hashem will cut off for any person who does this Avera, and he continues, that Hashem will cut off for him. The pasuk continues, Erev Oina Me'ola Yaakov, Hashem will cut off from such a person, and we're going to loy yaloy. So the pasuk is implying that such a person will not have Erev Oina, an Er Oina, which the Gemara is going to explain on the next line what that means, Me'ola Yaakov, from the tents of Yaakov, Umagish Mincha La Hashem Tzvakos, or somebody who offers a Mincha to Hashem. meaning that Malachi is informing the people, anybody who does this Aveda, Im Yisrael hu, if he's Yisrael, so he anyway doesn't have children who are koyin him, his punishment will be lo yilai er b'chachamim v'lai oyne b'tamidim. He will not have air literally means awake. So it means a person who is awake and lively and is participating greatly in the discussions of Torah. Rashi explains, chorif lahovin lahoris. He's sharp, he's able to understand, and he's able to teach. So he won't have air b'chachamim v'lo oyne b'tamidim, and he won't have any descendants who are answering among the Talmidim. Meaning, in other words, at least when you ask a Talmud, he may not be an heir, as in the one who's initiating the discussion, because he's only a Talmud, but at least he should be sharp enough to be able to answer. Such a person who does the Saveda of intermarriage with Goyim is going to end up that he's not going to have descendants who are shaykh to that. The im koyin who, and if the person who does this is a koyin, lo yale ben magish mincha, then he won't have any sons who end up offering korbanos to Hashem, meaning he won't have the schus of having descendants who serve in the Beis Hamikdash. Well, Pinchas, we're saying, had a grandson who not only is a regular koyin, but a koyin gadol. So therefore, you see from that Pinchas must not have done this aveda of znus. Now, Rashi explains in context that Pasuk is talking about a Jewish man who has relations with a goita. But Rashi explains that actually, based on a different Gemara, it also refers to a Jewish man who has relations with a zoyin. And that would include a married woman, where for her, any other man other than her husband would be znus. So therefore, so we see that includes that. And so Malachi is saying that's going to happen. So here, if we see that Pinchas had a descendant who was a Kohen Gadol, then it shows that he didn't do such an aveda. In fact, the Rif has a different explanation. He says that he says over here that the Rif printed over here in Ein Yaakov has a different explanation. He says that Rav actually would hold that Pinchas not only did not commit Arayas, he also didn't commit the Avera of eating the meat of the Kodshim before the fat was offered on the Mizbeach. And he explains because again the fact that the Pasuk says that his grandson was Kohen Gadol shows even if he had that lesser aveda, still the Pasuk wouldn't distinguish him by saying that his grandson was the Kohen Gadol. So therefore, it must be that he didn't do either one. Rabbi Yonason would say that Pinchas didn't do Arayas, but he did do the Bizoyan Kodshim, and then Chofni did that, and then Chofni was the same thing. Anyway, so Ela Lav Shmamina Pinchas Leichata. So therefore, that goes to show that Pinchas did not do the Saveira of Znus. And when it says that they lay with the women, it doesn't literally mean that they did. It means, like we said before, they were interfering with these women's marital life. So the Gemara continues. Ela Hok Siv Asher Yishkivun. Okay, but what do you do according to that with the pasuk that says Yishkivun, which means that they actually lay that, and Yishkivun is plural, so it means that they lay with the women. So the Gemara says Yishkivain Siv. Fine, but it's written without the vav in the pasuk, and therefore we can douse in as though it's saying that only one of them. So again, according on the face of it, then Rav is saying that Pinchas didn't do the Saveira of Znus, and he's not saying whether Chofni did or not, and he would explain the pasuk that way. That means that Chofni was guilty of actual Znus, but Pinchas was not. Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni would learn differently and say that neither of them were. According to the Rif's explanation over here, that Rav is saying that Chofni wasn't guilty of either Aveira, then the point is we'd be saying that Chofni at least was guilty of the one Aveira. And therefore it says it, therefore the Pasuk writes it in a way without the Vav, where it could instead be read as a single. The Gemara says, "Vaksim al bonai ki loy tov Ashmua." What about though when Eli hears about what's going on, he tells them off for it. So he says, "Don't do this, my sons, because the news that I'm hearing is not good that I'm hearing about you." So he says, "Al bonai" in the plural, my sons. So what's going on? If we're saying that only one of them is guilty, the answer is Amar Abnachman Yitzchok Bniksiv. Again, since it says the way it's written, bonai, it could also be read without the nekudas as bni. So again, he's referring to one son. Marsha explains, in other words, that since right before that in the pasuk it speaks about this asher yishkivun as hanoshim, it doesn't the part about bizoyin kodshim is a few psukim earlier. It mentions that Eli heard what his sons are doing asher yishkivun as hanoshim, and then he starts telling them off. So therefore, we should understand that what is he telling them off for is that aveda, not for the bizoyin kodshim per se. So therefore, that's what bothers the Gemara then. What it seems like both of them were guilty of Asher Yishkimonas Hanoshim. And the answer is that no, the word bnei, bonoi, can also be read as bni. Marsha also points out, because he continues Asher Am Hashem Ma'avirim. Now the Gemara is going to understand that the word Am Hashem Ma'avirim means you are causing the Jewish people to do averus. Now, if it's just bizoyin kodshim, that's not causing anybody else to do an avera. That's the avera is on them, that they're taking the meat too early and eating it too early. When would it be that they're causing other Jews, people of Hashem, to sin? Would be if they're doing something involving the women, which is what bothers the Gemara, that it sounds like Avi is telling them off for that. And the answer is that no, we would say he's telling only one of them off for it. Okay, the Gemara says, "Vaksiv ma'avirim." What about though? The pasuk continues that he's saying that you plural are causing the Jewish people to do an avera. And again, Amar Rav Huna b'Rav Shua ma'avirom k'siv. Again, it says it without the second yud, and therefore we can read it ma'avirom, that only one of you is doing it. In other words, now here you have a big issue, which is Rashi points out that in our Tanakhs, we actually have the word ma'avirim is spelt with both yuds, with after the vase and after the resh. For that reason, Rashi also points out that there's a problem with the name of the chacham. He says over here, kosha be'ena shema chacham anizku kan. I find it very hard to understand, Rashi says, the name of the chacham mentioned here. So Marshal explains like this. Marshal explains in Chidushe Halachas, not the Chidushe Agadis that we have in front of us over here. He explains like this. In older Gemaras, in manuscripts of the Gemara, it actually, the name of the Chacham that said that answered over here was Rav of Yeshua. So Rashi is bothered by the fact we never find that name of the Chacham anywhere else. So fine, you do sometimes have. There are many chachamim in the Gemara who are mentioned in only one place, but still Rashi finds it a little odd. So therefore, that plus the fact that anyway, what do you mean? This word ma'avirim, you're saying is spelt without the yud. The fact is we have it with the second yud. And Rashi says also, so because of that, Rashi explains, apparently somebody put a mistaken note on the side of the Gemara, and eventually it wound up by mistake in the Gemara. Because it actually says, really, the word ma'avirim doesn't mean you're causing the people to do averus. It means that the people are giving out the news. People are, like you have, vayaviru kol b'machna. They spread the news throughout the machna that everybody should stop giving to the Mishkan. So the same way over here, people are spreading the news about what you're doing. Nothing to do with averus. So Rashi takes this whole line out. On the other hand, Tosfos keeps it. First of all, so Marshal changes the Girsa to Rav Huna b'Rav Yehuda v'Yeshua, which is, of course, a Chacham that we have in many places in Shas. So in that case, then, if you're going to say that Rashi is bothered, then he's saying, how could Rav Huna b'Rav Yehuda v'Yeshua be saying such an explanation? Doesn't he realize that the word Ma'avirim means to be spreading news rather than to be doing an Aveira? Anyway, Tosfos keeps in the word and says, okay, you find in a number of places in Shas where the Gemara gives us a different, Masoda than we have. Tosfos gives another example from a Yerushalmi. Rabbi Akiva Eger on the side of the Gemara brings about 24 examples or more from all over Shas, where you have many places, sometimes even things that have implications as far as halacha. For example, there are places where the Gemara will darish in a halacha based on a word being mole or chaser, and we have a different Masoda. So that's just how it is. The Gemara apparently had one Masoda, and we have a different one. You find in books on the Masorah that in general there were two streams of the Masorah on Tanakh. They call them Ma'arvoi and Madinchoi, the Westerners and the Easterners. The Westerners are the ones are the people from Eretz Yisrael. The Madinchoi, the Easterners, are the people from Babel. Our Masorah that we have in our printed Chumashim and in our handwritten Megillas Esthers and Sifrei Torah and whatnot almost nearly always follows the Ma'arvoi. So therefore, what you may well have is the Gemara was following the Madinchoi, because after all, that's where the Gemara was written, in Bavel, whereas the Ma'arvoi had a slightly different Masorda, and for the most part, we follow them. Anyway, so it's not a question then. So it's not necessarily a question, the fact that we find it differently in our books of Nach. Okay, anyway, the Gemara continues. What about another pasuk? Because Bnei Eli, Bnei B'Yal, the sons of Eli were men of Blial, which means Bli oil. They don't have the yoke of Yiras Shemayim on them, implying that both of them were bad. The answer is fine, but Mitoich Shahola the Pinchas. Now Marshak points out this pasuk is as far as the Bizoyan Kodshim, but just Bizoyan Kodshim wouldn't be enough to call them Bnei Blial. only when we find the word blial is used in connection with znus. So therefore, that would so only znus would justify calling them bnei blial. But according to Rav, only Chofni is guilty of it, and according to Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni, neither one of them is. So why are we calling them bnei blial? The answer is mitoch shahela the Pinchas limchis b'Chofni, because Pinchas should have objected to what Chofni is doing, but like Micha, he didn't. Malal b'kosev kila chata. Then, like we learned in the Gemara before, therefore the pasuk counts it against him as if he actually did the avera, as we had the whole example with Yecheskel over there, where tzaddik isn't moicha on somebody else who does an avera, then he's blamed for it as well. Okay, next. Amar Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amar Rav Yonasan, Kol ha'omer b'nei Shmuel chatu, anybody who says the sons of Shmuel did a serious avera, Eina Elatoya is making a mistake. So what does the pasuk say? Shenemar. And by the way, Rashi mentions on the pesukim in Shmuel over there that what happened was, now you have in Sefer Shmuel, it tells about how after all of this, after Chofni and Pinchas are doing all of this for a period of time, and Eli didn't really do much to stop them, he tells them off, as it says in the pasuk, but he didn't actually take concrete action against them. So the pasuk describes how a Navi came, which the Medrash says that it was Elkanah, came and told Eli a serious, there's going to be serious consequences for it. And then afterwards, it describes how Shmuel had his very first Nebuah, where Hashem reinforced that point and mentioned further consequences. So then it mentions in the Pesukim, the next morning, Eli asks Shmuel, so what was your Nebuah? And Shmuel is afraid to tell him. It's a very harsh thing against Eli. And Eli tells him, he beswears him, he says, Ko yasa l'cha Hashem b'cho Yosef, Hashem should do this to you and even increase it if you don't tell me what the Nebuah was. And Shmuel finally tells him. So we know that the klala of a chacham, as the Gemara mentions in some places, comes true, even if it was only al tanai. So because Eli said such a thing, the result is just like Eli's sons didn't follow in his ways and then acted badly, as we just said, eventually Shmuel had the same kind of thing with his sons. But as we're going to say, again, what the Pasuk says about them is not to be taken at face value. Namely, Shenema, the Pasuk is right, he kasha zok and Shmuel v'gomer. When Shmuel was old, so it says that he had his sons serving as judges in Be'er Sheva, but the Pasuk continues, his sons were not going in his ways, and the Pasuk continues, Vayitu achrei habotza, they went after illegal gains. Vayikhu shoychad, the Pasuk continues, they took bribes. Vayatu mishpat, and they perverted justice. So now, Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni wants us to know they didn't actually do such blatant averas. Because after all, when the pasuk says they didn't follow in his ways, that implies bidrochav hu delay hochu, they didn't follow in the perfect ways of Shmuel, mechtanami lechotu, but they didn't stoop so low as to do actual serious averas of taking bribes and so forth. So what does the pasuk mean? Meaning, in other words, that Marsha points out, there's a Gemara elsewhere that explains, we learned about it in Brachas, for example, that, and that Pesukim described before that, Shmuel would travel all around Eretz Yisrael. He wouldn't wait for the people to come to him. He would travel around from place to place. He wouldn't even take anything from the people wherever he went. The Gemara tells us in Brachas, wherever he went, he would take along his entire household, where all of his household furnishings and everything he needs with him, so he doesn't need to rely on anybody else. But his sons were saying didn't do that. So they didn't do the good things that their father had done. Shmuel would go around to all the different places where Jews live and judge them in their cities. He wouldn't make them schlep to come to see him. He would go every year. Travel around to Basel and Gilgal and Mitzvah, which are areas, those particular areas are not that far from where he lived, but he would travel to other areas in Eretz Yisrael. Veshofat is Yisrael, he would judge the Jewish people. So he would go to them rather than waiting for them to come to him. Vehemoy Osukain, as opposed to his sons, didn't do that. Ela Yoshu Ba'areim, instead they stayed in their cities, in particular the Pasuk says, they were located in Be'er Sheva. In order to increase the pay of their shamoshim and their sofrim. Meaning, in other words, like this, Rashi explains, their shamoshim would have to go and summon people to Beis Din, so they would pay them. So this way, now the Balei Dinim would be required to pay for the expenses of that. So therefore, like this, they would have them be able to get more money out of it. And the Sofrim, the same thing. For example, you have, there are documents always that have to be written by Beis Din. So instead of going around and people, and they'd have them written in the places where people were, like this, they would charge people higher prices for the Sofrim to write these things. So Maharsha explains further that, if they had the Chazonim and the Sofrim traveling around with them, then you could say that they could claim, you know what, the expenses of traveling are going to be more than it's worth to pay them. So they would claim that we have to keep them in the city, and therefore that's the only way to hold down the costs, and therefore, but you're going to have to pay those costs of them coming to summon you. And then Maharsha goes on when it continues, Vayikhu Shoichad, they took bribes. What it means is, in other words, not Shmuel's sons themselves, but the Shamoshim and the Chazonim would be taking more pay from one than from the other. If they're going to be taking pay from the Baal Dinim, they should be taking an equal amount from both, at least, to pay for their expenses. But like this, sometimes they would take more from one or from the other, and that would cause that now the Shamoshim and the Sofrim are being more partial to one or to the other, and that would end up affecting the verdict. So the Gemara continues. Ketanoi, there's actually a machlokas tanoim about what the sons of Shmuel actually did. Vayitu achrei abotza, when the pasuk says that they inclined after betza, after ill-gotten gains. Reb Meir amechelkum shal b'fiem. Reb Meir says it means they asked for their portion verbally. Now they're Levim. Shmuel was a Levi, so his sons are Levim. So they're entitled to Maaser Rishon, but instead of, like this, it should be that you offer the Maaser Rishon to the Levi. Instead, it would be that they would ask people, they would demand people to give them Maaser Rishon. They being the great people, they being the judges of the generation, people would feel constrained to have to give to them. So therefore, other Levim are losing out. Everybody would be giving them their Maaser Rishon. So according to the mayor, in other words, it actually explains, they didn't actually pervert justice, but what they didn't actually judge cases wrongly, but they did demand Maaser Sheni, and by that they caused that other Levim were harmed and didn't get what they should have gotten. Rabbi Yehuda Malai Hitilo Abalabatim. Rabbi Yehuda says what they would do is they would expect Balabatim to transact business on their behalf. Milai is like when you give a Balabas money to invest for you, and his job is to invest it, and then you'll split the profits, and you have this is the kind of thing that a Heter Iska exists for example, because otherwise you have problems as far as the profits. So they were demanding a Balabatim to do that. Now what happens? One of those Balabatim eventually comes in front of them in for a din Torah. Inevitably, they're going to feel a little more partial to that guy, because hey, he's investing my money, he's managing my investments for me, and therefore automatically that would make them feel a little more to his side. Rabbi Akiva and Makupa Yisrael Shemaisim not the Bezraya. Rabbi Akiva says they were taking an extra basketful of Maaser, again, of Maaser Rishon, by force. In other words, Maaser Rishon is supposed to be a certain amount. They're taking more than they're supposed to be taking. Now, Maharsha points out that it doesn't necessarily mean that they're literally taking more than 10%, because then you have a problem that they're eating tevel, or they're causing the people to eat tevel. We're certainly not choshed them in that. What it means is, in other words, that, again, when it comes to giving Maaser Rishon, you're entitled to give it to whatever Levi you want. Instead, they were pressuring the Balabatim to give them their Maaser Rishon. In other words, and therefore, again, like we said before, the other Levim are losing out. Rabbi Yossi and Matonis not Lebizroya, and Rabbi Yossi says a fourth possibility, they were taking the Matonis of Zroya Lachayim Vakeva. They were taking them by force. Now Rashi gives two explanations. One is that they're not entitled to it in the first place. They're Levim, they're not Koyanim. Zroya Lachayim Vakeva are supposed to be for the Koyanim. The other explanation, though, Rashi explains, is Matonis doesn't mean Zroya Lachayim Vakeva. It does mean Maaser, but it means they're taking it themselves instead of waiting for the other people to offer it to them. So Maharsha discusses that now the Gemara tells us in Ksubis that the Gemara tells us in Ksubas that a dayan is not allowed to take a salary. That is included in taking shoychad, because again, he's likely to be more partial to the people who are paying his salary, unless it's called schar batola de muchacha, where it's obvious that he's taking time off his work to be able to judge Dina Torah. Where the Gemara gives examples of it over there. It gives an example, for example, of Kauno, who lived in Shmuel's times, where he had a job. He had a job checking out people's wine to determine when it's going to go sour, and therefore, if you have to take time off that job to judge people, Dina Torah, then he's entitled to be paid for that time where he's actually losing money otherwise, because otherwise he could have been doing his regular day job. So now what's going on over here is, sort of Yehuda, who's saying that the problem was Malai Hitilu, means, in other words, we're saying that that is the problem, that what they're doing is, so how is it called Vayikhu Shoychad, Vayatu Mishpat? Because, in fact, the Gemara tells us in Sota exactly that. That leads to Shoychad and to the perversion of justice, because, again, like Rashi says, then you have the person who's investing your money, you're more likely to be on his side. So as far as Matonis Nakla Bizroya, Marsha explains another angle on it. The Gemara in Chulin, when it discusses Zroy Lachayayim Bekeva, discusses the question. Now, the Pasuk says that the Zroi L'chayayim V'keva has to come min ha'om. The Pasuk says, V'zei mishpat ha'koinim me'eis ha'om. It has to come from the people. Whenever they shecht an animal, then they have to give Zroi L'chayayim V'keva. The Gemara discusses there, are the Levim included in ha'om or not? So therefore, now they took the view that, so the halacha is, because of that suffix, if a Levi has the Zeroy of the Chayim Bekeva, a Kohen can't force the Levi to give it to him, because the Levi can say, on the other hand, they can't take it from anybody else because of the same suffix. So now these sons of Shmuel were saying, we're taking it for themselves, rather they were taking one side of the suffix and assuming that they're able to take it for themselves, rather than saying it's reserved exclusively for the Kohen. So anyway, so we see that there were several different opinions what exactly they did wrong. Next one, Amrav Shmuel bar Nachmeni, Amrav Yonason, Kola Omer David Chata in El Atoya. Anybody who says that David made did the blatant Aveda that it says about him is only making a mistake. So again, what happened with David? Let's review the story briefly. So David sees, one day David sees Bathsheba, and he had her husband Uriah is away at the battle at that time. They're fighting against Bnei Ammon. As the Gemara is going to say soon, he had given her a get before he left. It's Machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos, what kind of get it was. We'll get to that soon. Anyway, meanwhile, David saw her. And the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin more details about it, that he realized that she's actually destined for him, etc. Anyway, he brought her to the palace. He had relations with her, and then he sent her back to her house. He figured that's that. Turns out she's pregnant. So now David called for Uriah to come back from the battlefield. He tries to convince him to go home. Mephoshim explained that what David was trying to do was cover up the affair. Like, this Uriah will go home. He'll be with Bathsheba. And when she's pregnant, everybody will assume that the baby is Uriah's rather than David's. The upshot is that it didn't work out. The upshot is that David, and as the Gemara will say further on, judged Uriah as a murdered B'malchus, but instead of killing him outright, he sends a message to General Yoav, telling him put Uriah in the front lines in a place where he'll be exposed to danger of the battlefield and he'll be killed. And sure enough, that's what happens. He gets killed. And then after that, David goes and marries Bathsheba. And then the upshot is Hashem sends Nathan Anavi and tells off David for all of this. So on the face of it, on the surface, you would just read the psukim as it is. You would say that David did two very serious averus. He was mezana with an Eishes Ish, and he had her husband killed unjustly. So now the Gemara is going to explain that actually neither one of those is what it seems. Now it's the Abarbanel, when he goes through this part of Tanakh, he actually says no. Very nice. The Chachamim are trying to justify David, et cetera, et cetera. But he says nothing doing. It really was an actual Aveira of Eishes Ish. Just that what happened was David did tremendous Tshuva after that for the rest of his life, and Hashem accepted his Tshuva. Here the Gemara is going to say not like that, of course, and the Malbim also takes very strong issue with what the Abarbanel says, and says if you look carefully in the Psukim, you see it's not like him, and the Gemara is going to go through the same kind of analysis. So Shenemar. So first of all, the Pasuk says, now the Pasuk, this Pasuk that I want to quote is much earlier in David's life. This is long before Bathsheba was even born. This is, it's still in Shaul's time. The Pasuk says, Vayhi David l'chol drachav maskil, David in all his ways was successful, Vashem imoy, and Hashem was with him. So so how would it be possible that such a serious avera came into his hands? Ushchina ima, and the Shechina would remain with him. If he had actually been mezana with an Eishes Ish, then surely that you couldn't say Hashem ima, that the Shechina would be with him. Now, so the Rif and a few of the other Mephoshim over here ask, so what? I mean, that was many years earlier. That was in Shaul's time. Maybe by now it's not the case anymore. So the Rif gives an answer that the word maskil also means, doesn't just mean successful, it also means thinking. So therefore, it means that whatever David always did, he's always thinking about, is it in consonance with what Hashem wants? So it's impossible that somebody who has that kind of mentality is going to do such a blatant aveda. There must be more here than meets the eye. Ion Yaakov and Anaf Yosef talk about in various angles that we find in various other Gemaras, in particular in Sanhedrin, that Dubin had the special quality of Asuki Shmaitza Liba de Hilchasa, not only to be able to learn Torah on a very high level, but to always be able to come to the correct conclusion. And that takes special siyata deshmaya. The Gemara explains that even Shaul HaMelech didn't have that, and that's one reason he was jealous of Dubin. Anyway, so if David has such tremendous siyata d'shmaya, it would be impossible that he would ever do such an avera. He wouldn't have continued to have that siyata d'shmaya, or even the other way around, that somebody who is on such a high level to have such a thing would not stoop to doing such an avera. So El Amani Makayim. So what does it mean when Nosan Anavi tells him off and he says, Madua Bazises Dvar Hashem Lasesara? Why have you disregarded or mocked or treated disrespectfully the word of Hashem, Lasesara, to do what's evil, which makes it sound like he actually did something evil? The answer is Lases means to do, means Shabikish Lases Floyosa. He intended to do something evil, but he didn't actually do it. What does that mean? So Rashi explains that, like this, the Gemara is going to explain soon that Uriah had sent her a get, but David intended that even get or no get, he's still going to have relations with her. So the purpose of that get would be, let's say, for example, the guy's missing in action. You don't want his wife to stay in Aguna. So David intended to do that even before she received a get. But he didn't actually, because in the event, Uriah had sent her a get, and therefore she's not considered an Eishes Ish at that point, as the Gemara is going to explain later. Marsha points out, there's other angles on what exactly the lasis means. Another point is that some of Mephoshim say, since later on in the story you have that David intends, so David calls Uriah back from the battlefield and he tells him, go home and enjoy yourself at home, where again the intention is figuring that Uriah will then have relations with Bathsheba, and when everybody knows she's pregnant, they'll think the son is Uriah's. Now that could have had serious consequences. What would happen if everybody thinks the baby is Uriah's later on? What would happen, for example, if they want to make a shidduch between that child and one of David's children? You'd have a problem of anayas. They're half brothers or half sisters, half siblings, whatever. What? Well, right. So you'd have, yes, that's true also. Yeah, because if she's an Eishes Ish, then you'd have a problem with Mamzeres, but you'd have lots of problems. Yeah. So that's the lasos. That's another explanation. David intended to do that, but in the end, Veloy Osa, in fact, he didn't end up doing it because, as the Psukim go on to tell, Uriah refused to go home. So therefore, in the end, that part of David's plan didn't end up working out. But had it worked out, then yes, it would have had serious consequences, because you'd have a baby over there that is possibly a mamzer, and you'd have other possible problems over there involving yuchsin and whatever, which might never be figured out. Marsha also points out over here, now it does say lasis by some of the other kings who were rishayim. For example, by Achav, it also says lasis. You're not going to say that he intended to do bad and he didn't do bad. The difference is, by all of those, it also says by Yas that they actually did. By David, it only says Lasis when Nosson is speaking to him. It never says by Yas, and that justifies us understanding that it means that only David intended to do something bad, but he didn't actually do it. He didn't actually carry it out.
But he had the kid.
So he had the kid, but that's the Gemara is going to explain soon, that Uriah had actually sent a get to his wife, and therefore she's not considered an Eishes Ish at that point. So we'll get to that point. I don't know if we'll get to it. We won't get to it tonight. We'll have to leave it. We'll have to leave it for later. But yeah. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav, Rebbe de Osi Midovid. So Rav points out in this connection, Rebbe, who was actually Rebbeinu HaKadosh, who was actually a descendant of David, Mahapich B'Dorish B'Schose, he will make every effort to find a schus, to find a way of exonerating David, his ancestor, to B'Schose de David. Namely, when the Pasuk says, Madua Bazis says, Dvar Hashem Lases Ara, Rebbe Omer. So Rebbe says, this is like what we just said, Meshuna Rozu, we call Rois Shabbatur. This Lases Ara is different than every other king or every other person in Tanakh of whom it says that he did bad, Shakol Rois Shabbatur, Ksibu Vayas, by all of them it says he did, but Kan Ksib Lases means Shabbikish Lases Veloyal. So again, that means that he intended to do something bad, but he didn't actually carry out the bad plan in practice, either because according to Rashi, again, he planned to have relations with her even if she didn't have a get, and in the event she had a get, or according to the other explanation that he intended that people would think that the baby was Uriah's, but in the end that didn't work out, and nobody thought that it was Uriah's because everybody knew that Uriah had not in fact gone home. So therefore, whatever it was that David planned to do that was wrong, Api Alocha, didn't actually end up happening. Therefore, that's why the pasuk says only losses. This is actually the last shiur before Pesach. We'll resume on the Monday after Pesach. I'll be back, Bez Hashem. So then we'll continue analyzing this and what exactly happened over here. And we're going to focus on, for example, when David sent Uriah to the battlefield to be killed, what exactly is David's responsibility for that, and the whole thing about Bathsheba having a get, and so on and so forth. So we'll discuss that in the future, Bez Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogo'ola, Vav Nissen. We say in the Haggadah, Vayihi Shom Legoi, that the Jewish people became a nation there in Mitzrayim. Melamed Cho Yisrael Mitzuyonim Shom, which means that the Jewish people were distinguished over there. So now the Rebbe wrote in a letter that for before Pesach, 1 year, the Jewish people in Mitzrayim were only a tiny minority and they were living under terrible conditions. But Chazal tell us they were still very different and completely separated from their surroundings. They proudly kept their way of life, their Mesiras Nefesh, and their originality as Jews. But we know that they were distinct. When it says Mitzionim Shem, they didn't change their names, they didn't change their language, they didn't change their religion, they didn't change their clothing. And because of that, that guaranteed their continuation, and eventually they reached the Gola. So the same thing is in our generation, by being Mitzionim Shem and keeping our uniqueness, we will bring closer, we'll hurry up and bring in closer the Gola Amitis Vashlema, Ayudei Mashiach Tzidkenu. Halachas, we were continuing on halachas of fragrances. What if you have in front of you various kinds of spices? So yesterday we talked about when you have one big mixture. Here we're talking about, let's say you have, for example, a fragrant fruit, like an esrog, and also a fragrant thing from a tree, and also another one from an herb, and so on and so forth. So each one gets its appropriate bracha. The order will be first the fruit, then the one from the tree, then the isve b'samim, and then mine b'samim for anything else. Now you also have, there can be incense. The Gemara calls it mugmar. So you take spices and you burn them in order to make a nice aroma. And also, for example, you might use it to perfume clothing. The Gemara mentions it. Sometimes you might even use it to perfume fruit, so that afterwards, when you eat the fruit, it has a nice fragrance. Anyway, so you do that. When do you make the bracha on it? So the Gemara explains that you make the bracha as soon as the smoke starts rising, even before the smell reaches you, just like with any birkas hanen, and you do it before you actually have hanah from it. But not before the smoke starts rising, because you have to have the bracha as close as possible to the hana. And then again, the bracha is according to whatever kind of thing it is. If it's from a tree, then atzeh b'samim, and so on and so forth. Only if you're doing it in order to smell the smell of it. But if you're doing it in order to remove a bad odor, like nowadays you spray air freshener, so if you use incense for that purpose, then you don't make a bracha on it at all. And he goes on to say the same way, any other fragrances that are not there in order to smell, for example, you have a warehouse full of besamim, or for example, again, you're using mugmo, you're using incense in order to perfume clothing or whatever. So it's only meant to give an aroma into the clothes. Then you don't make a bracha on them, even though you do have intention to smell them. The Alter Rebbe adds, though, that if you pick them up to smell them, then you would make a bracha on them.